Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight's podcast is the Clown Hour, where we seek to entertain and inform, which would be infotainment. I just made that shit up, so let me just stop playing. Anyway, thank you for tuning to the podcast. My name is Scott Burks, and this, of course, this is the Clown Hour. This is the podcast component of my sports blog called Times. It's called spelled K. You can find me on the web at www.theclowntimes.net, and also from the Facebook, just whatever you're in, your smartphone, laptop, desktop, wherever. Just go to the search window and type in the Clown Times. Again, it's Clown Times, spell with K. You'll find me there as well. I've been having fun recently with the experience of one Cam Newton with his rather interesting getup that he's been wearing for the past few weeks, especially this past week after the loss against the Buccaneers to the Buccaneers. But at any rate, we got a lot of NFL to get into. We're going to be talking about the week that was, week two of the NFL, as well as how the injuries to Drew Brees and Big Ben Roethlisberger are going to affect the Saints and Steelers respectively going forward. And we're going to touch on the pass of the torch from Eli Manning to Daniel Jones. I mean, well, that's a nice way of putting it. Eli just got his ass benched, if you want to just be real about it. So, with me to help me talk about it, he's my co-pilot. Y'all know him from the Yard/HBCU Sports and raps about all things HBCU Sports, as well as Sleazy Radio on Facebook Live every Tuesday with the coaching company. The one and only Dwayne Nash is in the house. How you doing, bro?
Man, Scott, I am doing well. But before we go on, just in case, I don't want to anger AKA in company with this. So I'm going to go ahead and let you know. In company would be our man Sweet Lou. So it's
okay.
Just the three of
Got
us.
It.
It's me, okay. Coach, Sweet Lou. I don't want Sweet Lou to think that we're leaving him out because he is technically the brains of the show.
Oh, there
you go.
Know. Can't leave out the brains. Oh, hell no.
Yeah, Coach is the mouth.
Hell no, we can't do that.
Lou is the brains. I'm the sexy. So, you know,
I'm about to say, what
sure.
The hell are you?
I'm the sexy, and you know, I'm the eye candy for all the ladies. You know, they're the married guys. I'm the eye candy. I'm a whole lot of candy, but I'm still the eye candy nonetheless.
There it is, man. Hey, got to represent, right? That's cool, man. That's what's up. So shout out to Sweet Lou and the crew. How about that, Sweet Lou and the crew, the brains, the coach, and the quote-unquote, the sexy. There you go.
Not the quote-unquote.
it's weird coming from another guy. Come on.
I completely understand that. I'm comfortable, though. I'm comfortable. I understand. I get it.
There you go. I should be comfortable, too. I should stop tripping. week two. NFL. Oh. Before we get into that, let's go, because we're both hurting right now, me and you.
Yeah.
Both fouls. Your skins, my steals, we're hurting right now. And speaking of hurting, I'm in a world of hurt. Steeler Nation is a world of hurt. Who mm-hmm. that nation is in a world of hurt as well with working backwards here. Drew Brees going to be out for 6 weeks following like surgery to repair. It's a torn thumb, right? Or a sprained thumb looking. I think it's a torn ligament on his thumb.
I think it is a tear.
Yeah, exactly. He's out for 6 weeks. And Big Ben, who's been playing like Large Benjamin this season so far, he's out for the year with a bad elbow, which pretty much people are thinking it's Tommy John, which is even scary. So let me ask you this, bro. Should Saints, should Who Dat Nation and Steeler Nation give up on the season, throw the baby out with the bathwater, or should we just hold on and just trust our respective organizations? Let me get your take, and I'll give you my take.
Wow. The thing is this, though. There are a lot of people, including myself, that had, you know, higher than average expectations for both of these teams. And when I say that, I mean better than 8-8 finishing the year for both of these organizations. Right? Most had the Saints a lot higher than that, if not winning the division,
probably winning the division,
the conference. Yeah, you know, and I had them winning the conference. You know, I had them in the Super Bowl. But of course, that was all contingent. Yeah, which is you know, very interesting because of course it was majorly contingent on the play of Drew Brees. Didn't need to be great play. He didn't need to give me 4,040 because he didn't do that last year. But he needed to be out there and he needed to orchestrate the offense. As it pertains with the Steelers, you know, I saw them winning the division. Excuse me, at best, you know, making the playoffs, not necessarily going far, but at least being competitive. It's going to be interesting to see what happens now after that, after both injuries being extremely major. Of course, with Ben being out for the entire season and Drew being out for a chunk. Steelers starting 0-2, Saints starting 1-1. If, and this is a huge if, Drew is capable of coming back at the earliest, and they're saying 6 weeks is the earliest he can come back. Oh, man.
Yeah.
It'll be a tough haul to hold if they don't win any games within the next 6 weeks. But let me start with Big Ben first, right? Because
yes, please. Hit me with it.
Yeah, we kind of have, you know, a little bit more of a blueprint with Big Ben. You know, he's missed, what's that, 1-3, about 7 games over the previous 4 seasons. And then we had that one season in 2015 where he missed, what was that? He missed 7 games, 6 games. He missed 6 games that year.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he missed 6 and was playing in that 7th when he got hurt. I'm sorry.
Right.
It was – yeah, he's playing in that 7th when he got hurt.
Well, that's the year he got hurt against Cleveland, right? I think that's the year he hurt his ankle.
Yes.
Against Cleveland, yeah.
And the games that he was out, they were 3-2, if I remember correctly. So they were barely over 500.
Yep.
But if memory serves me, that was with Mike Vick. And, matter of fact, I think Mike Vick got hurt during that stretch, too. So they had to go to their third string, who was...
Exactly. Remember that.
I can't remember the guy's name. Was it Landry Jones?
I'll look it up. I don't know if it was Landry Jones, but, yeah. Shoot. Yeah. It might have been... what's that? He has a Polish last name.
It was Landry Jones.
Okay. I thought it was
Landry Jones. And they went 500 at that point in time. Now, the thing is, as a matter of fact, they were without Le'Veon during that time, too. So this is we've kind of seen the situation before. I mean, they had AB. Yeah, he was there. And it was a target for QBs to throw to during that time frame. But, you know, they were still without Le'Veon, and they were without Big Ben. So we've kind of seen this before. If there's a way that they could somehow go 500 in the last 14 games, that's 7-7. They're 7-9. That's not what they want.
Yep.
But at the same time, what it does is that it just gives the Dolphins a lower draft pick than what they were expecting. Because
let's go to the schedule for the Steelers. Right quick, if you don't mind.
No problem.
0-2, obviously. And just to piggyback with what you were saying, because you were thinking out loud and I had a thought too. It's tough. But the good news is we don't have that tough of a schedule. I mean, we play the AFC East.
The AFC West.
And we only get the Chargers. We only get the Chargers. We only get the Patriots, so we got that out the way. Was that? So we already got our asses kicked by the Patriots week one. We got them out of the way. So I'm pretty confident against the rest of the division, especially that Miami's is in full tank mode right away. They're not even waiting to the end of the season to tank. But if you look at we also playing the NFC West, which is tough, but not that – well, it's going to be tougher because the 49ers are balling, but I think that's kind of like fool's gold because of who they played so far. I mean, the Buccaneers and the Bengals, seriously. But, you know,
true.
We get the Chargers. From the AFC West, we have to go to Los Angeles. But we play our division foes, and Ravens are looking good again against bad competition, and Cleveland is looking better. But I think, realistically, I'm looking at the rest of the schedule. We play in San Fran this coming weekend. If we win in San Francisco, I think we're going to go 8-8 or 9-7. I think if we win in San Francisco, if we don't win in San Francisco, we're going to be no more than 8-8. That's just how I look at it. And remember that draft pick we traded to Miami for Minkah Fitzpatrick, which I love because, I mean, hell, if anyone's seen the play of our back end, our secondary, we definitely need an infusion of talent. Okay. But the rub is, I think Pittsburgh, to their credit, they're not going to want to tank this season. They want to see what they have in Mason Rudolph. They want to check out the depth, and it's like the next man up. I mean, with my Steelers, it's the next man up. We're never going to fold on the season. So, I mean, Miami, they're not going to get a draft pick but so high, maybe no more than the 20s if the Steelers play their cards right. But
I think somehow get to 7-9. 8-8, yeah, it'll be somewhere within the 20s. But it is going to be highly reliant on what Mason Rudolph does. And don't get it mixed up. Mason Rudolph almost had the Steelers come back from behind against the Seahawks.
Down.
So if he can continue on that trajectory, it'll be very interesting to see what the Steelers do. But the Saints?
Yeah.
The Saints is another interesting situation. Let me see what their schedule is like over the next few, because, of course, that will explain. So they go to Seattle, they have Dallas, they got Tampa, and they got the Jags, and the Bears and the Cardinals in that six-week span. And then they have a bye. Come week 7.
Right.
So if they can get to the bye week with their backup situation and they can somehow get wins against the Bucks, the Jags, and the Cardinals, it'll be very interesting to see what they do with the Bears in Chicago on a Sunday afternoon. I don't know if they beat the Cowboys, as much as I begrudgingly want to say that out loud.
I know, right? It hurts, doesn't it?
it hurts a whole lot saying that out loud.
They won't. I don't think they'll be winning in Seattle either.
And I don't know if they'll be winning Seattle either. So if they're able to go 3-3 in that span, and they're 4-4 when Drew comes back, immediately after they come back, they have Atlanta at home. They go to Tampa. They got Carolina. They go back to Atlanta. And they got the Niners. And that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 right there. If they could somehow get 3 of those, I could say they could probably get 4 of those with Drew. You 8-4.
Yep.
With the Colts.
And that's the thing. That's why I'm not worried about New Orleans. I'm not worried about New Orleans as much as Pittsburgh because, I mean, not only is Drew Brees coming back during the season, obviously, but the schedule is not as daunting. I mean,
it's not.
They're going to be shell-shocked going in Seattle and hosting Seattle for the next couple of weeks. I'll give you that. I'll give anyone that. But then come the Buccaneers. They're in Jacksonville. Jacksonville's already quitting. When the coach has a full-fledged mutiny. And they go to Chicago. I'm not as afraid for them for Saints in Chicago because man, Chicago has a quarterback named Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah,
and I'm not high on him. Never been high on him. And so it wouldn't shock me to have a Teddy Bridgewater-led squad, Taysom Hill, part of his squad going to Chicago and win. Now Chicago does play defense. Their defense
they do.
Is nasty.
Mm-hmm.
But their offense is even grosser. That's it from a gross standpoint. So it would shock me if New Orleans coming out there with a win. So really, if you look at the next six games, I think they're going to lose the next two, in Seattle and at home against the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
They're winning against Tampa. They're winning Jacksonville. They're winning Chicago. So they'll go three. I have them going three, and of course they're going to beat the Cardinals so at home. So they have them going 4-2 over the next six games. So that would put them at 5-3 when they go into the bye week. That ain't bad.
That's not bad at all. And then you know what they have after that? Immediately after that, they have their division. And that's what lines up.
That's right.
That makes that even nicer because you get Drew back.
Yeah.
As you face your division
in
back-to-back-to-back-to-back games. And then you got the Niners.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the Niners will be come week 12 at that point, or week 14, I'm sorry. And then you go to the Colts, who are without Andrew Luck.
The host of Colts.
And we don't I don't know what the Colts will be at that point either. You know, it depends upon how Jacoby Brissett looks at that point.
Though.
He's looking good so far. You know, we just have to wait and see. Give him 15 weeks. We'll check back.
I guess the defensive coordinators will have some tape on them by that time too. But yeah,
That's the thing. You know, you have some additional tape on them by that point. Marcus Mariota,
right?
He's shaky, and then we don't even know if we'll have Cam come week 17 for the Carolina Panthers. He might not even be healthy at that point. So. Drew will come back at a very, very favorable time for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm not going to come out here and say that they've run that table after November 10, but, man, that table looks very, very delectable to that team if they're at as close to full strength as they can be with Drew Brees being back.
Right. I agree. I totally agree with you. Sharing the brain there, bro. That's why I'm not worried about New Orleans. The schedule fits up pretty well. I mean, they're getting the worst part of the schedule out the way at the right time. The next two games. The perfect time. That way, Teddy Bridgewater, Taysom Hill will get some time behind center. They'll get the reps in. They'll get more confidence. Head into what's the next game again? I'm scrolling back up. I guess the home game gets the Buccaneers. I mean, that's perfect for them. That's damn near perfect for them. Seriously, I mean it's shaping up. That's why I'm not worried about New Orleans. And to your point, if we think if the next 6 weeks plan out the way we think it's going to be, 5-3 head to the bye week and getting Drew Brees back. On a stretch run where they face most of their division opponents. The last half of the season is heavily on the division. Only three games outside of the division the last half of the season. So that's damn near perfect for them. And so they go 5-3. They should go 5-3, and they get Drew Brees back for the stretch run. It's gonna be a party in the Superdome.
Yes, it is.
Yep.
If they go 5-3 in that stretch, I don't think they lose another game. They may lose one other game in that second half of the season. and that means they'll be 12-4. At worst,
right.
if they somehow go 3-3, which is also a possibility, and they finish the year off 11-5, that's the division two. So,
It's tough.
But the thing is, it's all the next 6 weeks will be very, very telling on what happens, even though I believe that they can rebound in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm. Now, Pittsburgh, on the other hand, I'm worried.
I am concerned. But the interesting thing to me, though, was the Minka Fitzpatrick trade and the fact that they were willing to get rid of their first-round pick, which leads me to believe one thing. They believe that Ben is coming back next season. There were some questions on whether or not, you know, Ben would return for 2020. The Steelers must think he's coming back because they got rid of their first-round pick. I don't think an organization who thought that they would be losing their star QB would get rid of their first-round draft pick. I don't think so. But, you know, go ahead.
I hate interrupting you and your. I know you're flowing, bro. I'm sorry. I know you're flowing.
That's fine.
You're flowing. I love your flow. But check this out though. What if the GMs in this league like to throw smoke screens. What if it's a smoke screen, but then get somebody to buy some quarterback needy team to bite on Ben and give him a first and maybe a third in return and get that first-round pick back.
Ooh.
Because he's due for a roster bonus of $2 or $3 million in the spring, and I think he's due like a base bonus of – I forgot the numbers, but it's early in the offseason. Now, if they don't – I mean, Tommy John is Tommy John. So if they deep down think, you know what, let's just see who will bite. You think they could pull that trigger?
Wow, so it's a Tommy John surgery. That's what makes it even more interesting.
That's why I think it's going to be Tommy John. That's what it sounds like. I mean, because if you saw his injury, it was not a contact injury. It was in a storm motion and he hurt his elbow.
It was. You're absolutely correct. And that's the thing that I am kind of concerned about, because if it is Tommy John, you know, baseball players, they had their surgery, they come back, and they're not right for another year.
Right.
That's a whole different throwing motion, throwing style, a lot more stress. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a QB off the top of my head that needed Tommy John surgery. I can't. So it'll be interesting to see how Ben, who is a bigger, stronger guy, returns from this surgery. And then that's the other thing, too. If I'm a GM, do I necessarily want to take that chance with a quarterback who is 36, 37, coming off of a Tommy? I have to think that my team is that close, Indianapolis Colts, in order to make that type of move. But, you know, there's some that think that, you know, the Colts make that move for Eli, who, of course, comes off the books next year anyway. And they don't necessarily have to give up assets in order to give him. But it'll be interesting to see what happens, one, with the Steelers without Ben this entire season and how they approach the remainder of the season. Two, that's the thing, too, because that was the thing I was just about to say. It's a possibility that the Steelers believe that Mason Rudolph might be the eventual heir apparent to Big Ben, and this is his opportunity to show it. And if he can, then they don't necessarily need that first-round pick, and they get first-round grade talent with Fitzpatrick. And it's a win-win for them. And they can use that second-round pick for something else. If not, then they will probably have to use that second-round pick on a QB. But we'll see. We'll see. Everything will pan out based upon how Mason looks this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a Mason Rudolph evaluation year. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So it's going to remain to be seen. Me, I'm at the point where I'm damn near, I'm damn near indifferent. I mean, it is what it is. I think we should have fired our defensive coordinator because a long time ago, because we have all those first round, second round picks on defense. Yet we still can't cover. Yeah, my defense still can't cover you or me if we run a pass pattern. So. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if it makes a difference with Ben or without Ben at this point. It would have been nice to have that draft pick though, but I do love Minkah Fitzpatrick. I do love his talent. It's gonna be very interesting if we come up 8-8 and out of the playoffs, how we decide to move forward, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. But one last thing about speaking of fan disenchantment, your beloved Washington. I feel for you. You're up 17-0 in week one, lost that game. You hung in against Dallas, but I mean,
sure, that was
a weird game. But let me get your thoughts on Washington thus far this season, because I don't want to rub salt in the wound and reach the Cowboy game. That's kind of fighting words for you. So go ahead.
Well, not at all. And let me explain why. I don't know if I necessarily had a chance to say it when we talked about when we had our season preview, but I felt as though that the Chiefs were coming into this year as a rebuilding year, and put it was like a quiet way of doing so without necessarily announcing that it's the start of a rebuild, right? And let me explain why I believe that. They've already drafted their QB for the future in Dwayne Haskins.
Right.
They've drafted their running backs for the future. And Darius Geis or Bryce Love, waiting to see which one of those actually hits because they both have injury history. And the interesting well, not the interesting thing, but the bad thing for Darius is the fact that, you know, he came off an ACL injury only to hurt his other knee. And we'll see what he'll look like come next season if he's 100% then. And then at that point, we'll have Bryce Love as well. So you got your running back situation, you got your QB situation. I found it very interesting that there were a lot of people who were extremely critical of the Redskins receiving core, not having any high hopes for them whatsoever, only because they hadn't had any playing time. But Scary Terry is coming out here balling and showing a lot of people that just because they didn't have any playing time, any pro playing time doesn't mean that they're bad players. So the receiving core in the passing game as of right now is looking pretty good. It's the stuff that people thought would be good at this point, which is causing the issue, and that mainly being the defense. So there were a lot of people who thought that they had talent on the defensive side of the ball, and I'm still one of them. They have a very young front seven, with the exception of Kerrigan. But Kerrigan can get you at least somewhere between 9 to 11 sacks annually. You bring in Landon Collins as a free agent. The cornerback situation is still in flux. Thankfully, this is Josh Norman's last year.
Yeah, Josh Norman.
Well, Josh Norman, they both like to get burnt. You know what?
I see what you did there.
You see what I did there? Yes. The thing is, I don't know if they started to question Josh 2 years ago when there were questions on whether or why he wasn't covering the number one receiver on teams. And then, you know, it started to get to his ego that they started putting him on number one receivers. He wasn't getting beat consistently, but he was still getting beat. Now he's getting beat consistently by everyone. The thing is, if you got speed and 24s in front of you, they're saying just run a go route. You'll get open, and we'll throw you the ball. It's happened for the first 2 weeks of the season. And unless they get that dude some safety help, it's going to continue to happen for the rest of the year. But, you would hope that a guy that's getting paid that much money doesn't get beat like that. But unfortunately, right. he is, and it's something that you're stuck with for the rest of this season. So that's something they'll probably end up addressing in the offseason in terms of either free agency or draft. But, yeah, like I said, young D-line, they got a couple of young guys at the linebacker spot. They got a couple of young corners. Landon Collins isn't that old. Running back core mm-hmm. outside of AP ain't that old. Receivers ain't that old. They'll probably have to replace Jordan Reed. And outside, well, Trent Williams, who has still have yet to report yet, they're looking okay without
Trent. That's right.
They're looking okay yep. without Trent. It's not great, but they're looking okay without Trent. And those guys are relatively young. So I'm looking at this as a rebuild. I didn't have high hopes. I didn't have any expectations of them coming out and being world beaters. I thought if they had Trent and the defense was as good as people expected, that maybe they could sneak up on people and then go 8-8, maybe 9-7, what I like to call the Jay Gruden special. But as of this season, you know, if they somehow pull out 4 or 5 wins, okay. Rebuild, it is what it is.
Yep.
But there's some people who are screaming, if they can get through this gauntlet, with the rest of this gauntlet, with the Bears this week, Giants next week, and then the Patriots, if they can get through that gauntlet, that everything else might be smooth sailing. And that somehow they may surprise the world and win 9 games, which I doubt. But, you know, if they can win 6 games, okay, I'm good. The main question is, of course, is whether or not Jay Gruden is on the hot seat. He might be.
Yeah.
I don't know if you necessarily.
You think Dan Snyder would break him off? You think he'll ever break him off, though? I mean, he's been around.
He's been around, and he's gotten 2 extensions, which shocks me and shocks a lot of people when he got the first one. And again, when he got the second one, it was even more shocking. But
right.
It just depends upon if the team keeps looking bad. And if they continue to look bad, and the coordinator's not out of here before the Patriots game, then expect that he'd get Jay Gruden out of here sooner rather than later.
Well, speaking of sooner rather than later, getting people out, what the hell is going on in Miami and New York? I mean, I understand what's going on with the Jets. They're injured. They're walking mastery, and that's devoid of talent. I get them. At least they're trying. Miami,
yes.
I think the game plan before the season, I guess the players don't know it yet, is this is like effort. We're going to lose every game by a lot. Tank for Tua. Get a number one draft pick and get Tua Tagovailoa out of Alabama, because I think he's eligible to be drafted after his junior season. So I don't know what to make of it. I feel bad for the players because they have pride, right? But
mm-hmm.
to get the heads beat in back to back weeks. I mean, first of all, 59-10 to Baltimore, then 43-0 against New England, both at home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anybody shows up to watch them at Hard Rock Stadium, they should be drug tested, or maybe they have a gambling problem that we don't know about. I mean, because why else would you go see them? Why else would you go see a tanking squad? But why? What's going on in Miami, bro? Because it seems like I don't know what their plan is.
You know, last week they were talking about players who were requesting to be traded, and it looks like Minka Fitzpatrick
yeah.
is one of those guys.
Full flex mutiny.
Yeah. So, and it's funny, right? Because your boy, what is the head coach's name down there? Flores is a
Brian Flores
is a Belichick guy. And
yep.
he's coming in there being Belichickian, and these guys are 0-2, and they want out of there. They're not even waiting to see if he can turn the ship around. They just want to bounce.
Right.
Which says a lot, because coming into the season, I thought the Dolphins would be bad, but I didn't think this would be this bad. But
yeah,
guys are looking for an out. And when they're looking for an out, that means they don't see any future within the
yeah.
next season or two where they see a potential turnaround. They don't even want to stick around. And this is Miami that you're talking about. They don't want to stick around in Miami? So it's something within that culture that's going on right now with this new regime that these players don't like. And we've already seen it, that this coach has already gotten rid of guys that he doesn't want to deal with. He got rid of Tunsil, got rid of Steels, got rid of Fitzpatrick. So, yeah, he's looking to build this roster in his image. And, you know, most coaches, they don't have a lot of time. So he's going to have to do something within the next two seasons to go ahead and start impressing Dolphins brass and that fan base to get them back on board. Because right now, it's like everybody's jumping ship. And it's interesting that if they are taking for Tua and they just got Rosen, that don't seem right. But, you know, because I thought Rosen was your guy. But is he not?
I thought so, too. And that speaks volumes to Miami because the coach staff, because Rosen has had, not to give him excuses, just stating the facts, he's had different offensive coordinators the last how many seasons? So he hasn't had that stability.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was brought in to be the quarterback, the guy in Arizona last year, only to be usurped by one Cliff Kingsbury and when they brought in Kyler Murray. And so I thought that Cliff Kingsbury system would work well with Rosen, to be honest with you. But, you know, one thing led to another, and here we are. I just think this is more of a – I think this is to your point when you said that Flores is being Belichickian. Remember when he played blasted Jay-Z's music after Kenny Stills said what he said when Jay-Z made that deal with the NFL? That was all just to fuck with him. And, you know, Kenny Stills is one of his best players, if not his best offensive player, period. And you alienate him. So if players are looking like that, at that is, like, does this Flores cat know what the hell he's doing? I mean, is he trying to Belichickian crap on us? And he's a new dude? He's a new Jack, if you will? Part of me thinks they flat out quit on him.
That could be the case,
too. That's what I think.
Because you look at it like,
and I hate to say that as a minority coach, but it is what it is. I think they're quitting on this dude. If it's not it was a full fledged mutiny.
Yes, it is, and that's the thing, because he has rings, but he's not the architect behind those rings. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He was part of that crew. He wasn't the leader of that crew.
Yeah.
He was part of that crew. And you can pull moves like that if you're Belichick. You know, you can't pull those moves if you're Romeo Crennel. If you're, what's your boy's name that ended up
with
exactly. You know, you can't pull those moves if you're them. You have to be Bill Belichick to do it in order for it to work. Or while you're pulling it, your team is winning. And they're like, oh, we can go ahead and we can buy into this and we'll do this. But until then, man, you got to win games. And then they're not. And they're looking really, really bad. So, yeah, he has no other choice but to bring in guys that he picked out.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just you don't see this that often. That a professional team gets the asses kicked the first two games out the box that. You just don't see it. We'll get you out here on this, man. We'll close the show on this. So you the big news of the week, aside from what happened with the injuries to Big Ben and Drew Brees and Miami seemingly tanking on the season, is what happened with Eli Manning getting benched for Daniel Jones, rather, in New York. Now, I thought this benching should have happened a long ass time ago, like as a two seasons ago, at least, right? But I guess they got themselves a franchise quarterback, which still I'm shocked that they would draft Daniel Jones that damn high in a draft. I mean, I guess they hadn't seen all of his games at Duke. I guess they didn't see him get his ass kicked by Wake Forest, 59. I think it was 59-7 to end the season last year. but whatever, it is what it is. But still, nevertheless, the Daniel Jones era has begun. But let me ask you this. What is or should be the legacy of Eli Manning? To this, because I'm assuming this is his last hurrah in New York. So, what should his legacy be in your eyes?
That he was a okay quarterback that won 2 Super Bowls. That's it. And the reason why I leave it at that is if you look at this new stat. That's what they tell you, that he was a okay QB. You know, the one thing that everyone likes to throw out there, but he won 2 Super Bowls, though. Okay, I'll give you that. He did win 2 Super Bowls, but
yep.
You know what? That entire team won 2 Super Bowls. Okay?
Right.
I mean, let's be real. The Super Bowls that they won, it wasn't like Eli and the Giants offense just were like magicians offensively throughout the entire game. No, the defense kept those games close, and Eli was capable of you know, architecting these game-winning drives. You can't take that away from him. But I don't think they scored more than 20 points in those Super Bowl wins.
Nope. 17-14, and I forget the other one, but, yeah, they're low-scoring Super Bowls.
They were both low-scoring Super Bowls, which lets me know that their defense was capable of keeping them in the game, and they just happened to have the ball at the right time, and they were able to execute a winning drive. Okay, Eli was capable of doing that. Let's look at the things that he led the league in throughout his entire career. There was, 1, 2, 3 times he led the career, but led the league in. But interceptions with at least 20.
Interceptions.
And then, you know, he led the league in sack percentage as well. So it's kind of hard for me to say that a guy who in three seasons tallied 72 interceptions.
Yep.
That's just 3 seasons. Then you have a year, had a year where he had 18, he had 17. 2 years with 16 and a year with 15.
Let's see how bad it is. I have the stats in front of me, brother. He led three times he led the league in interceptions, 27, 2013, 25 in 2010, and 20 in 2007. Last season, he had 11 picks, but he only threw 21 touchdowns. And if you look, I mean, his best years came in 2014 and 2015 when he threw 30 touchdowns and 14 picks and 35 touchdowns and 14 picks respectively in those years. But still, I think those seasons, I mean, it's not like they did so well anyway. But if you want to really check out the most telling stat about him, his record. His regular season record, do you know what it is? It's 116.
And 116.
And 116. 500.
Ding, ding, ding.
Perfect.
500.
It's so typical. So apropos, right?
Yes.
For a guy who had an average career in the regular season, but a stellar career in the postseason. That's just a trip, man. That's an absolute trip. And you know what he reminds me of, right quick?
Who's that?
I think he's our generation's Joe Namath. Because remember, Joe Namath, he has that one Super Bowl win when he guaranteed a win over the heavily favored Colts. And his regular season stats and record are subpar at best.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in the Hall of Fame. So yeah, so basically, if you look at it, Eli, I think Eli's going to get in. I don't think he's Hall of Fame caliber. That's just me. But I think his 2 wins over Tom Brady in the Super Bowl and those 2 Super Bowl MVPs are going to get him in. I think that's going to get him in. That's on the strength of those 2 Super Bowl wins alone over the Patriots.
Yeah.
Are going to get him in the Hall of Fame.
I completely agree.
That's
with
why
you.
May not be the first ballot. Yeah.
And it's interesting that you brought Joe Namath up, right? Because if you look at it,
mm-hmm.
but at least let's look at the categories Joe led the league in, right? Those years. I'm looking at a lot of stuff here. Matter of fact, for those of you who haven't been, go to profootballreference.com. You know, you get a whole lot of NFL stats there, right? And when you're looking at the players'
right.
stat line, bold numbers in their stat line meant that they led the league in those categories, right? So I'm looking at categories here where at least Namath led the league in completions, attempts, yards, touchdowns, but you know what? He also had four seasons where he threw for 20 or more interceptions, too. He did have that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is it. but he led the league in yards per game, unlike Eli. And then also like Eli, his career record, 62-63-4. Very subpar. But the fact that he had that huge Super Bowl win over the Colts, which is very legendary, just like Eli's win in the Super Bowl was very legendary, he'll get into the Hall. But if you're asking me, there's no way. There's no way that
I don't think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I really don't, but
not at all. And people
that's why
who keep arguing this fact that he belongs keep throwing out team stats. He beat the Patriots though. No, the Giants beat the Patriots though. What about those years he didn't make the playoffs?
Yeah.
What about those years?
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The defense alone won the first Super Bowl. I think that pass he threw to Mario Manningham in the second
mm-hmm.
Super Bowl, that was a classic throw in the clutch. That throw was awesome. I can't
Don't
take
get
that
me
away
wrong.
From him, but to your point.
Yes, he made plays.
Yeah.
And yes, he's made my skins look horrible throughout that time. My God, we had to go through the likes of Tony Romo, Eli Manning, and Donovan McNabb in all of our division at the same time, man. And it was ugly for the skin. And yes, Eli made the skins look bad on a lot of occasions. But still, this dude was still average to me. Sorry. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Shouldn't make
it. His stats will tell you the story. Average stats. I mean, hell, again, his regular season record is 116. And 116. If that doesn't tell you how average his regular season career has been, then I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, we'll see about that. But we'll see how the Daniel Jones era ends up going. And I guess no time left the present, and all good things must come to an end if you're a Giants fan. it's pretty much like, you know, change is constant, and just like that, my Steelers. And we like that with the Giants, and it's just the way it goes in pro football. Hey, thanks a lot,
yeah,
man.
I was going to say, just real quick, the other thing with Daniel Jones, this has to be a time where he succeeds now because they need to impress Saquon. If it does not work right now, Saquon is out of there in a couple of years.
Wow. Got to look at that, too. Good point, man. Good point. Hey, thank you, man. Take a life,
no
brother.
Diggity. Holla.
No doubt. That's my guy, Dwayne Nash. Please check him out on Sleazy Radio on every Tuesday on Facebook Live and, of course, on the Yard / HBCU Sports where he laughs about all things HBCU Sports. Thank you all for tuning into the Clown Hour. This is Scott Burks. Prayers go out to fellow Steeler Nation, who that nation, and going to Giants Nation and maybe Dolphins Nation, too, because they don't know what the hell they're doing down there. Anyway, take care. Peace out. 06.